The only reply Nightshade gave was a little contented snickering purr that sounded exactly like a snore.
"Sometimes I really do feel the answers are so close I could reach out and touch them," said Seth, giving her a nudge. "Nightshade, I need to ask you a favor. If Norrie catches sight of me, I'll lose any chance to keep an eye on Mr. Bunn."
He dropped the book absent-mindedly on the bed, his mind busy with possibilities.
"You could easily keep an eye on Mr. Bunn, and he won't notice you. Find out if you can spot him doing any magic."
"Keep an eye on Mr. Bunn doing magic," muttered Nightshade sleepily. "On it." Even if Mr. Bunn really had done magic at the prospect, that still did not answer the question of how the poison had got into that dessert. Seth headed back to search for Mr. Bunn, his mind whirring. He still had a long way to go. Chapter 31. An Explosive Combination. But before Seth could even begin his plan to keep an eye on Mr. Bunn, it wasn't Norrie who dragged him off to do something else. He was accosted by Inspector Pewter, and led to what had been Dr. Thelomius's room. The door creaked open, revealing a room that felt flat, silent and untouched, from when Dr. Thelomius had pressed that gold coin into Seth's palm. He remembered the kindness of Dr. Thelomius, as he'd stood there only yesterday, and Seth felt a lump rise in his throat. That faint smell of grassy tea lingered. The two teacups were still on the small, polished side table, where the two old friends had chatted. Pewter dug around in his pocket, and extracted an enormous magnifying glass, and turned to examine the door.
"Are you checking for fingerprints?" Seth asked, as Pewter next crossed to the big, curved four-poster bed. Alongside it was Dr. Thelomius's suitcase, neatly closed.
"Ah, fingerprints." Pewter shook his head. "I've heard of that. Sounds very clever."
Seth went across and sniffed deeply at the dregs left in the cups, looking for that uncomfortable, pungent smell in the dining room as Dr. Thelomius lay dead. But that smell was nowhere in this room. His nose told him there was simply tea in one of the cups, and the other contained some sort of herb. Spearmint, probably. Pewter had gone to lie full length on the bed. He was over 6 feet tall, and even in the enormous bed, his feet dangled off the end. He was flicking through the book left on the bedside table. Seth expected a magical text borrowed from the Elise Library, but it was an Agatha Christie mystery, the sort Norrie Bunn read, and sometimes passed on to Seth, The Mysterious Affair at Stiles, the sort of story where someone was murdered and everyone started to look at each other and wonder who might be next.
"You said you needed my help."
"Indeed I do. We're looking for clues," said Pewter. "Specifically, we are hoping that Dr. Thelomius left us a clue to what he was really doing here."
"Wasn't he judging the prospect?"
"That's what he said he was here for," said Pewter. "But people don't always tell the truth, do they?"
Pewter peered at Seth, who tried hard not to look back guiltily. He wanted to ask all sorts of things, like what Pewter thought of Mr. Bunn doing magic. But it was difficult without giving away things that were supposed to be secret, like mentioning about Angelique and the walls talking. She had told him it was top secret, that she was investigating magic at the hotel with her divinoscope.
"You seem pretty friendly with Miss Square," said Pewter, interrupting Seth's thoughts, and leaving him with the uncomfortable idea that somehow he had known Seth had been thinking about Angelique. "Has she confided in you as to what she's really doing here?"
"Really doing here?"
Seth's thoughts flew to Angelique and that cane of hers. What had she told him? Something he didn't understand about ripples. Then she had made him promise not to breathe a word, and told him she had found magic here at the hotel. But she hadn't explained anything, had she? And it was very strange behaviour for Dr. Thelomius's assistant. Why had she been looking for magic? And what had that meant about it being magic she had never seen before? Seth looked into Pewter's light blue eyes, and felt himself swallow quietly, and knew he was still under suspicion. He watched his eyes glow a darker blue, as if Pewter could read his every thought, everything he was anxious to conceal. Angelique, dashing about with her cane, sending out the blue sparks and getting him to promise silence. She had nearly zapped him, too, when he'd let slip he'd heard of a firefly cage. He must not let on about knowing of sinister magical devices.
"Believe everything she tells you, do you?"
went on Pewter pleasantly.
"Trust her, do you?"
Seth thought for a moment, then remembered he didn't trust her at all. He had probably given himself away by being silent for so long. Pewter was looking at him, his eyes glinting like pieces of sky through a high window.
"She told me about Red Valerian, sir. If he's a known enemy of Dr. Thelomius, can't you arrest him?"
"Told you that, did she? Yes, pulling him in would be a great plan. Red Valerian is someone who has been giving magic on headaches. Actually, less a headache and more organizing his followers in arranging most unpleasant deaths."
Pewter gazed at him for an uncomfortable few seconds.
"But there is one big obstacle to us bringing him in. We don't have a clue who he is. Some people don't even believe he is a real person. Just a name to frighten the children, as it were."
Pewter crouched next to Dr. Thelomius's suitcase, unclipped the clasps, and gently went through it.
"I'm impressed with how well you are learning your magical history, Seth. I am interested in your thoughts."
"My thoughts?" Seth thought hard of something, anything that might sound helpful. "Dr. Thelomius's policies, they led to some sort of battle, called the Unpleasant, right? Because of that, 42 sorcerers are now missing, feared exploded."
"Indeed, that is sadly true."
Seth watched Pewter lift up a picture of a pug dog to look behind it. Not for the first time. He wondered if Pewter was really any good as a detective. He itched to be away, watching Mr. Bunn not here, looking for clues that only Pewter seemed to believe existed.
"Dr. Thelomius was seeking out people worthy of being apprentices," went on Seth carefully, "but also making everyone go through the prospect, even those from magical families who feel they have a right to be part of the Elise. He had enemies."
"You're quite right. Some people have been heard to comment that under Thelomius, the magical world has become open to every crackpot who ever managed to bend a spoon. We are in a dark period in the world of sorcerers. Now, you are helping me search."
Seth looked about him. "The trouble is, sir, that there aren't that many places to hide things in a hotel room."
"The trouble is," said Pewter, lifting pillows and peering under the bed, "that someone has been in here since I searched last night after everyone went to bed."
Seth stared around him, then at Pewter.
"We can only hope they weren't any more successful than me in finding it," said Pewter. "All right, Seth, now I am relying on you. What have I missed?"
Seth looked about again, not knowing where to begin. The room looked completely untouched.
How exactly are you so sure someone has been in here?"
"That'll be the charms I placed after I searched late last night."
He took out his magnifying glass to peer at the carpet.
"But someone got past it all."
"How can you know that?"
"Fingerprints are beyond me, but you must let me have my own little methods."
Pewter was looking again through what Seth had taken to be a magnifying glass, but as Seth watched, he doubted it was actually magnifying anything. Pewter, he guessed, was using it for something else.
Is that another magical device, like the sort of thing Dr. Thelomius liked to invent?
He asked. Magical this may be, but it still can't tell me who is doing this, said Pewter, his voice rising and sounding unexpectedly cross. Now what we have here is evidence that someone is finding a very clever way to get past magical charms. Someone is moving about this hotel quite freely, doing what they want, and getting into places they are very much not supposed to be. And if there is one thing I hate, it is my opponent being one step ahead of me. We need to find what they were looking for before they get to it.
Seth had watched him go through everything from the bed to the suitcase, even peering behind the pictures. What could he possibly find? What could he possibly be looking for? Seth concentrated on trying to imagine himself as Dr. Thelomius here in this room. If Pewter was right, he had something he urgently needed to hide. If it was still missing, that meant it had to be something small. Where might it be?
You haven't tried the top of the wardrobe, sir.
Actually, I have.
But this one has, like, a groove that runs around the top. I know because I dust in here. Things get stuck in there.
Pewter leapt forward, and Seth watched him feel methodically from one side to the other, reaching further, stretching his arms, then stopping to give a cry of, ah. Seth could see that. Finally, his fingers had struck something, an object small enough to be concealed in his closed hand. Seth inched his head forward, so that his nose almost touched Pewter's palm. Pewter opened his fist, and they both stared at a small object, pale, short, thin, and slightly knobbly, and a little bit scratched, lying in the palm of his hand. Was this it?
It looks like the bone of a small creature.
Seth didn't like to say that the first thought that had flashed into his mind was that it was the bone from a baby's finger.
"Is this usually here?"
Pewter asked Seth. Seth shook his head.
"Absolutely not. I do the cleaning, and Nori Bun makes sure I do it to her high standards. But with our VIP guest, she was fanatical. Everything was dusted twice, even the tops of the doors. This definitely was not here before Dr. Thelomius arrived. He must have put it there himself. But what is it? Is it important? It couldn't have looked less important."
"This must be it," said Pewter. "What Dr. Thelomius hid. What someone else had been searching for.
This?
It's what really brought Dr. Thelomius to the Last Chance Hotel."
They stared at the tiny, pale, twig-like object. As Seth looked closely, he began to think that the scratches might actually be symbols and insignia, carefully carved onto the surface, but that didn't help in knowing what it was. Pewter cleared his throat.
"I think it might be a key."
"A key, sir?"
Pewter was lost in his own thoughts.
"That means Dr. Thelomius's real purpose in coming here was to lock something, or maybe unlock."
Pewter scratched his left ear.
"Any ideas, Seth?"
Before Seth could reply, the air was split by an ear-piercing scream. Chapter 32 The Spectre in the Bedroom. Seth and Pewter thundered towards the source of the scream, and were just ahead of Dorinda Dunster Dunstable and Count Marid, who were neck and neck when they reached the first floor landing. They all arrived at Gloria Troutbeam's room, where Professor Papperspook was busy trying to calm her.
"Astounding news,"
declared Professor Papperspook in a deep and hushed voice.
"We are privileged to have had a communication from Dr. Thelomius."
"What do you mean?"
demanded Count Marid.
"Communication?" Kingfisher shoved his way to the front. "He wrote to you? Something about why he was murdered? Show it to me. Show me the letter."
Professor Pappusbook flapped her hands and waggled them above her head.
"Not that sort of communication."
She moved aside and prodded the timid Gloria Ford with her elbow.
"Tell him, Gloria."
Gloria pulled up her white socks and stood up straight as everyone crowded into her bedroom.
"A communication from him since he departed," she announced,
sounding surprisingly proud, her moon-like face taking on a flush of colour.
"I saw a shadowy figure in the corner of my room."
"Hang on a minute," said Kingfisher, his eyes narrowing. "This important communication was from a ghost?"
"He must be a wandering, troubled spirit," said the Professor, shaking her head sorrowfully.
"It's not him that's troubled," muttered Kingfisher.
Gloria Troutbean drew herself up fiercely.
"There was a presence in my room, a spectre. I saw it."
Gloria's face took on a blush of ugly crimson.
"And it spoke to you?" said Kingfisher, with heavy scepticism.
There was a pause before Gloria said,
"Not exactly. How can you be so sure it was Dr. Thelomius?"
Angelique asked, arriving from somewhere.
"Did you see him clearly?"
"Well, do you know of any other troubled spirits lurking around here?"
pointed out Pappusbook.
"So this apparition, did it say anything?"
said Kingfisher, with another sneer. Professor Pappusbook's plumage bristled.
"He has come through to Gloria. We should try again and find out what he wants to say."
"I think I already know what he wants to say," announced Gloria.
"To identify his murderer," suggested Dunster Dunstable, looking thrilled.
Gloria shook her head.
"Something more important."
Kingfisher turned to Count Marid.
"What do you make of all this?"
Count Marid had been lurking behind the crowd in the small room. He looked thoughtful for a moment, then shouldered his way forward and stood in front of the flushed-looking Gloria. He seized her hand.
"I say this is tremendous news. What a breakthrough. Did he really try to speak?"
"He was just a shadowy shape. He was gone in an instant."
"And it was definitely Dr. Thelomius," sneered Kingfisher. "Short guy, old fella."
Gloria scowled at him.
"It was like a grey shadow. But it can only have been Dr. Thelomius, can't it?"
She stamped her polished black shoes again.
"I've told you he has a strong connection to my family."
"Where was this presence?"
asked Angelique. Gloria waved at the corner, and everyone looked to where she pointed, the part of the room that was dominated by a life-size portrait of a woman dressed in black with a sour face and disapproving eyes. Everyone stared at the scary woman in the picture, who looked like she'd never had a day's fun in her life. Seth wondered how anyone could possibly sleep with that face, watching your every move, and guessed the same thought had occurred to everyone.
"I am sure that picture would spook anyone," said Count Marid gently, starting to move away.
But Angelique began to feel all around the frame, even peering behind it.
"Was the shape actually in the room?"
"I didn't just get spooked by a portrait," said Gloria defensively.
Angelique was brushing her hands over the surface of the portrait. Seth guessed she was dying to zap it with her divinoscope, but knew she wouldn't dare with so many people around. Professor Pappusbook leant towards Count Marid excitedly.
"This really is a most exciting development in Gloria's magic. I suggest we test her abilities, see if she can contact him again."
"What do you mean?"
Kingfisher interrupted.
"We need to talk to Dr. Thelomius. I suggest we hold a seance."
Chapter 33 A Secret. Kingfisher, barked out a laugh, and Gloria Troutbean's colour turned from angry, uneven crimson to an ill-looking white.
"I may be young, and my magical powers may not be well developed, but I come from an ancient magical family. I could tell the lot of you things about the Sorcerer General that would shock you,"
snapped Gloria, her eyes flashing.
"I know why he wants to talk to me. I expect he wants to apologize."
Count Marid turned.
"What for?"
Gloria spoke again. Her voice had grown shrill.
"It's time you all listened to me. Dr. Thelomius came through to me because I know Dr. Thelomius's secret."
"His secret?" echoed Marid.
She swung around, jabbing an accusing finger randomly.
"My grandfather invented one of the cleverest magical devices of the age, and he was cheated out of getting the credit for it by Dr. Thelomius."
"Don't say too much, dear,"
muttered Papa Spook, starting towards Gloria, who was being crowded by Count Marid and Kingfisher.
"That's enough, Professor Papa Spook. I'm sick of listening to your advice. You made me put on those ridiculous shoes,"
she turned and stamped her foot,
"because you interfered and didn't believe I had a talent to get me past the prospect and into the Elysee. But seeing the dead is my magical power, and I'm not going to be cheated out of getting recognition for my magical gifts."
"Do be careful what you are saying," said Professor Papaspook,
finding herself shut out by the crowd.
"What secret?" said Angelique. "Yes, tell us,"
said Dorinda Dunster Dunstable. Gloria looked around, her hands clasped together in front of her, her eyes flashing.
"Ah, now you are listening."
Professor Papaspook, peeping under Count Marid's arm that barred her way, said,
"I'm sure they don't want to be bothered, dear."
Gloria ignored her, enjoying herself.
"You all know the famous story of how Dr. Thelomius and my grandfather, Wintergreen Troutbean, were best friends when they were young. Everyone laughs at the crazy inventions, the pranks. But do you really know why they fell out?"
Her eyes had narrowed to slits, a triumphant smile on her face.
"It is a terrible story."
Gloria was making the most of this.
"Dr. Thelomius, the one everyone goes on about being so utterly marvellous, well, it is time everyone knew what he was really like."
"No, Gloria!" shouted Professor Papaspook, trying in vain to reach her. But Count Marid deliberately barred her way.
"I think we should hear this."
"There is a reason that matter is secret," she hissed. "My grandfather and Dr. Thelomius created this device,"
ploughed on Gloria, gleefully ignoring Professor Papaspook.
"But Dr. Thelomius got cold feet when he realized what they created, its awful evil power. Then it disappeared. Torpor Thelomius accused my grandfather of stealing it and selling it for a fortune. My grandfather was never able to prove his innocence."
She drew herself up further and said in a deep and portentous tone,
"It broke his heart. Dr. Thelomius was responsible for forever tarnishing the noble and ancient name of Troutbean."
Professor Papaspook finally wrenched herself free and seized Gloria.
"So sorry. Probably better to leave Gloria to have a lie down."
She attempted to shoo everyone back towards the door, but they moved reluctantly, all eyes transfixed by Gloria.
"She really doesn't know what she's talking about." "I don't need a lie down,"
said Gloria, trying to squirm out of her grasp.
"And I do know what I'm talking about."
"But what is it?"
asked Count Marid, pausing in the doorway.
"What is this device you're accusing Torpor of inventing and then becoming scared of?" didn't you know, Count, about your best friend being responsible for inventing something so wicked and feared? One of the grotesquely evil inventions of the sorcerer's world? Your marvellous Dr. Tholomyès invented the Firefly Cage.
Chapter 34. We all know what he stood for.
It's a monstrous lie,
came a gravelly voice into the heavy silence that followed Gloria's shocking statement. Everyone turned to Marid, his ruined face the picture of misery in a sea of motionless faces, frozen in a moment of shock.
Torpen never invented that infernal device. He never could. He stood out against misuse of magic, against sinister magic of all kinds. He fought against all of that.
We all know what he stood for, Baldo,
said Pewter, slapping a reassuring hand on Marid's back.
We all know what a great man he became.
Became?
Said the Count, uncertainly. He turned to Angelique.
You worked closely with him, Miss Square. Wasn't he the kindest, most generous, helping magical people make the most of their magic, and using magic as a force for good is the code he lived his life by. He simply would not have been capable of inventing that atrocious device. His hands moved in deep agitation.
Well, who can honestly say they didn't invent something of immense deadly power and brutality in their youth?
Put in Pewter, mildly, as if saying something reassuring.
You show me any great sorcerer, and I will show you someone with secrets. Sometimes taking a wrong path in your youth sows the seeds of greatness.
Seth had to fight an urge to react with a sudden burst of laughter, after all the tension, and had to cover it with a cough.
You think it's true that his inventions were once evil? You believe he did do this monstrous thing? He was the inventor of that abomination, the Firefly Cage,
went on Marid.
I think, said Angelique thoughtfully, that using magic for good means resisting the powerful pull of sinister magic, Count Marid.
Who can be both wise and young?
Said Pewter, cheerfully.
Making your mistakes early leads to wisdom beyond your years. Isn't that what they say, Baldo?
He slapped Count Marid again on the back.
Who cares about his sinister past?
Seth looked at Marid's face. If it had shown devastation at his friend's death before, it now looked even more haggard at hearing such a terrible accusation.
"You look like you could do with a sit-down, sir," suggested Seth to Marid. "Why don't you head for the hotel lounge? I'll make you some tea,"
he offered, receiving Pewter's glance with a nod. He was glad of a reason to slip away, much as he longed to hear anything more that was said about whether the other guests believed this accusation of Dr. Tholomyès having a sinister past. But he hadn't forgotten. He was supposed to be keeping an eye on Mr. Bunn, and he suddenly realized that Mr. Bunn hadn't come running when Gloria screamed. So where was he? And had Nightshade had any luck? Was she any closer to finding out if Mr. Bunn was magic or a trickster? Had she got anything to tell him? He decided that no one in the lounge would notice if their tea took a little longer to fetch. He just needed a little time. Where would Nightshade be now? Hopefully, she wouldn't have just fallen back asleep on his bed. She would be on the trail. He moved stealthily through the lobby and paused by the welcome desk. Behind it was a tapestry picture of a girl in a pretty yellow dress that concealed the secret entrance to where Mr. Bunn had a tiny study. Was it possible that Mr. Bunn was in there right now? Seth tried to picture him sitting there, poring over magical textbooks and practicing spells in secret. Could he catch him right now? He hadn't seen Mr. Bunn for ages. He crept behind the welcome desk and tried to listen for any telltale signs that the room was occupied. He pushed aside the tapestry
and move the tiny door just enough so that he could see that the room was in complete darkness. No one was allowed in here. Seth had never got further than looking from the doorway. He had always assumed Mr. Barnes spent his days here as idly as possible, skulking quietly, leafing through a newspaper, taking a nap. But had Mr. Bunn recently been in here secretly, finding a way to do magic?
"Aren't you supposed to be in the kitchen?"
a voice behind him snapped. Seth jumped, turned and caught a whiff of Norrie Bunn's rum-laced breath on his cheek, and raced into the kitchen before she could even begin to yell at him. He reluctantly slumped his way to the kettle. How was he going to find any time to do any sleuthing? How was he going to find Mr. Bunn? Seth could only hope Nightshade had had better luck. And then he found Mr. Bunn. He was there, right in front of him, at the sink, tackling the enormous pile of washing up very, very slowly, almost in a daze. Seth kept his head down as he assembled cups and the biggest teapot he could find, constantly darting looks at his employer and thinking how he could bring up a conversation about how on earth Mr. Bunn had been secretly practicing magic. How had he made Henri's little carved bugs come to life? Seth burnt to know the truth. But how could he get the truth out of Mr. Bunn? It had to have been a trick. One that was good enough to fool even Angelique. But it was so difficult to believe Mr. Bunn had managed that. How had he done it? As Seth slowly filled a jug with milk and gathered everything together on a tray, he went through everything in his mind once again, as he tried to hit on an answer that made sense of everything. He turned to Mr. Bunn, a question on his lips, about whether his employer was really a sorcerer. But he only noticed how lined and saggy his face was, as his hands rhythmically soaped a plate over and over in the foamy water. Instead of seeing the lazy man he had worked for all these years, Seth tried really hard to see a powerful sorcerer.
"Ah, Seth, all these visitors," Mr. Bunn said, wiping his brow and leaving a trail of bubbles. "I don't really believe you poisoned the old fella, do they? They wouldn't really take you away."
"I don't know, sir. There is a lot I don't know. This place is beginning to seem almost a mystery in itself." He stopped as he picked up the heavy tray loaded with the giant teapot, cups and jug of milk into the hallway, and realized these were almost exactly the same words as Angelique had been saying to him right from the beginning, that all the answers were here at the hotel before the prospect even arrived, and that Seth must have all the answers. Only he didn't. He simply didn't. So when he saw a figure moving at the top of the stairs, Seth just slid the tray quickly onto a low table in the lounge and slipped straight back out again to follow quietly up the stairs. Chapter 35. Watching the Tragedy Unfold. He hovered in a shadowy space and watched. Angelique was working her way along each of the paintings on the first floor landing, running her fingers deftly around each one in turn. Seth watched, fascinated, from the shadows as a flash of blue light lit up the landing, and Seth saw her frown as she took out her red notebook to write something in it.
"Seth, what can you tell me about the paintings?" she said, without lifting her eyes from the notebook.
Seth stepped out of the shadows, embarrassed. The woman in the mad hat grinned at him from the painting at the end of the corridor.
"I don't know anything, really. I don't. But what are you doing, Angelique? Do you think the paintings have got anything to do with... anything?"
he finished lamely.
"Good question, Seth. Do you think they are connected?
to the murder? Well, I thought maybe to each other. She bit her lip and frowned. There is something strange here, something else that I don't understand. She stowed the notebook in her ruby handbag and flipped closed the silver top of her cane. I keep telling you that you have more answers than you realize. She moved closer, her dark eyes flashing dangerously. I just can't work out if you actually think it is a good idea to keep it all to yourself. He rubbed his neck as he recalled Angelique pressing in with the end of her bewitching cane the last time he'd let slip that he knew anything at all. That's what had happened last time he had mentioned a firefly cage, but now he had no choice but to risk mentioning it again. He was now desperate to know. What exactly was a firefly cage? Why had everyone reacted with such deep horror when it was mentioned? Angelique had told him Dr. Thelomius used to be a scientific inventor, and Kingfisher had confirmed Dr. Thelomius used to invent with wintergreen trout bean. But could kindly Dr. Thelomius truly be the inventor of some sort of horrible magic? What did it do? That firefly cage that Gloria mentioned, the one she says Dr. Thelomius and her grandfather invented, what does it actually do that is so terrifying? You have to tell me now. What exactly is a firefly cage? Why is everyone so shocked? He heard Angelique suck in a rapid breath. But at least this time, she made no attempt to shower him with those lethal-looking blue sparkles for merely mentioning it, even though he'd found he'd tensed himself for that to happen. It's a prison. It's a particularly cruel way of imprisoning a sorcerer, she told him quietly, flipping the silver top on her cane. Their body is trapped, but there is one thing that is still free, their magic. Seth, it's horrible. It means if someone traps a sorcerer in a firefly cage, then someone else can access their magic. It was difficult for Seth to imagine exactly why that should be so horrible, but he could see it was something that struck terror into the hearts of people with magic. But what was really troubling him now was why had the firefly cage been written about in the Black Book? As he headed for the lounge to refill the teapot, Seth could tell they had all been discussing something important by the way Pewter, Marid, and Kingfisher looked up. Angelique had followed him in, and she took one of the squashy seats gathered around the low table. The room that seemed to have settled with an unshakable gloom, and Seth thought that he should probably relay the fire to cheer things up a bit.
"Miss Troutbeam has offered us a seance, and I must say, what a totally terrific idea," announced Pewter. "Shall we say the dining room in 1 hour? Mr. Kingfisher, if you could see to the necessary arrangements, excellent."
Kingfisher didn't look happy about it, but he got up to go and do as he was told.
"My feeling is that if Dr. Thelomius's undead spirit is wandering the hotel, we would track it down there," ruminated Pewter, drumming his long fingers on the table. "I think it might be very revealing."
Marid nodded his head heavily.
"Anything you think that will help clear up this awful mystery and mess?"
He mopped his brow. The sound of familiar tiny footsteps made Seth tense. Tiffany arrived in the room, her skin gleaming, her face beaming. All heads turned and Seth knew something bad was coming when she turned to him with that slow, evil grin that made him quail.
"I've just a few things to show you. I think you'll find them fascinating," she said, addressing the room with a girlish giggle. "I don't know if any of this might help. I do hope so."
And onto the table in front of everyone, before he could even begin to guess what was coming, Tiffany tossed Seth's black book. Chapter 36
Gilbert's extra-strong pickles. Seth stared at it. It just lay there, and he had to fight an urge to snatch it up before anyone else got to it. Any minute now, someone would pick it up and discover the recipe for apricot deliche and the picture of a firefly cage. Tiffany looked towards Seth, her face a vile mixture of contempt and triumph. She also had something else in her hand he recognized, and all he could do was watch, as almost in slow motion, his life savings kept in the old Gilbert's extra-strong pickles jar rolled across the table, continuing its noisy journey until it fell onto the floor with a crash, depositing the coins across the carpet. Tiffany had been in his room. It didn't surprise him that Tiffany knew all about his secret hiding place. Now his small hoard of precious possessions was spilt out and everyone had come over to see. Even Kingfisher had returned already, as if keen to be there to see Seth's shame. Tiffany leant forward and picked up the one coin that stood out, holding it in her fingers so that it caught the light and glinted. The gold coin he had been given by Dr. Tholomyès. She tossed it to Kingfisher.
"What's this?" he demanded.
"Tips," replied Seth sullenly. He felt sweat prickling uncomfortably at the back of his neck.
"A gold coin as a tip for the saucepan scrubber," scoffed Tiffany.
"It was from Dr. Tholomyès," said Seth quietly, "for taking him tea." Mrs. Bunn snatched the coin from Kingfisher and examined it closely.
"This is a gold coin. Have you any idea how much it's worth? A gold coin for taking tea?"
Her eyes narrowed, making her pointy face look full of spite. Kingfisher took back the coin and rolled it in his fingers and turned to Pewter.
"Seth never stops lying, does he?"
Seth looked at Tiffany and could see a slow trickle of dark scarlet blood running from a short horizontal cut on her cheek. He wondered where that had come from. He focused on inching towards the black book. If anyone saw that picture of a firefly cage, he'd be in trouble. Who would believe him, that he knew nothing about magic, and that he had never even heard of Dr. Tholomyès?
"You do know what this is," said Tiffany, sweetly taking back the coin. "I'm afraid it looks like Seth stole this from Dr. Tholomyès. He must have stolen the coin and knew Dr. Tholomyès was going to expose him as a thief. Do you know what we have here?"
Her eyes were full of an exultant fire, her smile wide as she barked her hateful laugh.
"Now we know why Seth killed Dr. Tholomyès, to stop him accusing Seth of stealing."
"I didn't steal it." He had to get to that black book before anyone read it. But Tiffany caught on to what Seth was doing, and as he moved to pick it up, she lunged, just beating Seth to it.
"And what have we here?"
she scoffed, snatching up the very tatty-looking black book, only held together with its scarlet thread. As she'd reached forward, Seth noticed that the back of her hand was scored with long parallel scratches, glistening with tiny droplets of blood that matched the cut on her face. It looked like she had been in a fight, and there was only one opponent Seth knew would leave long scratches like that. He felt his insides boiling with rage.
"What have you done to my cat?"
he said through gritted teeth, almost throwing himself across the room to wrestle the truth from her. But she'd already started flicking through the book. Her eyes lit up with exultant glee, and she started to read out some of the worst of the weird handwritten notes and scribbles. And it must be completely obvious to everyone listening what Seth wished he'd noticed right away, that the notebook contained notes about sinister magic.
"Ooh, what do we have here? This looks fascinating. A picture of something called a firefly cage. I thought that was very nasty magic indeed, Seppi. What have you got to say about that?
The look on her face told Seth everything he needed to know about just how much she was enjoying this.
A firefly cage?
Kingfisher raised his eyebrows and took a look at the book.
What have you done to my cat? Seth yelled again.
Tiffany's dazzling blue eyes narrowed.
Oh, don't worry, I dealt with her. That manky creature won't be giving you a reason to steal from the kitchens any more, Seppi.
What other artifacts of sinister magic have you been hiding? Empty your pockets, demanded Kingfisher.
Seth's tunic had a lot of pockets. He had leather pouches where he gathered herbs when he saw them growing in the garden. He laid these on the table alongside a ball of string, a paper knife, and a tiny torch, and a potato peeler. He'd forgotten he'd put that there, and an awful lot of mushrooms. But then his fingers were fumbling in one of his deepest pockets, and found something so curious he didn't even know what it was. He drew out an object and frowned at it, until he recalled where it had come from. It was that weird nut which Professor Pappersbook had told him had dropped onto her from the shrubbery. As he held it now, his fingers found something unexpected. It had a lid. A disguised bottle made out of a nut, he thought, even more fascinating. He handed it over and watched as Kingfisher peered at it and removed the lid. The aroma released took Seth immediately to that awful moment the night before in the dining room, watching the tragedy of Dr. Tholomyès's death unfold. The circle of shocked faces surrounding the figure lying on the floor, and that smell, the smell he now associated with death. Professor Pappersbook had given the disguised bottle to him. Now he understood why she had winked at him like that when she told him to dispose of it more carefully. Professor Pappersbook thought he was the one who'd thrown it out of the window, and it had got caught in the shrubbery. She had been trying to help him cover it up. Seth opened his mouth to say something to defend himself, but no words came. The determined glint in Kingfisher's eye told Seth that Kingfisher had also worked out exactly what it was. But before either of them could speak, a shaft of light shot out of the book, so blinding that it forced Seth to look away. It disappeared as suddenly as it had arrived, like the brightest torch beam switched on and off again. But Seth could just about make out something still glowing, a gleaming imprint on the book's spine where it had been blank before. Kingfisher dropped the book, and Angelique moved quickly across to seize it and put her nose close enough to read. It says, Witch Racht. She looked at Seth searchingly.
But he had no answer, no idea what it meant. And as she said the words, there came an echo, low and hissed, and seemed to leak out of the walls, making the room vibrate and rumble.
Witch Racht.
What was that?
Asked Tiffany, her eyes shifting about her, wide with alarm. Now everyone looked towards Seth, who could only mutter that he had absolutely no idea. Tiffany sped to snatch the book back from Angelique, taking her by surprise, and dodging out of Angelique's way, quickly turned the pages. Then her eyes lit up triumphantly.
Well, 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 this is most exciting. A recipe for, what's this, apricot deliche, Seppi? Don't tell me this is the book you got that recipe from. No wonder Dr. Tholomyès dropped down dead the minute he ate it. And just think, Seppi, you tried to put the blame on me.
Chapter 37 Someone with Serious Magic. Seth sat on the upturned bucket,
He was locked in the cupboard again. He drew his hands through his unruly hair. That was it, then. What chance did he have of ever clearing his name? And what exactly had happened to Nightshade? He felt sick. He looked so guilty. Kingfisher could really not be far now from getting his wish of taking Seth away from here in handcuffs. Surely, he was never going to convince anyone it was all just a series of misunderstandings, and that he really wasn't guilty of anything. What was he going to do? The only thing he could cling on to was the fact that he hadn't done it. Someone else had. He had to work out who it was and prove it. Did he have answers? He really should have by now. But did it really matter anyway? He thought despairingly, because how on earth could Seth prove anything now from the wrong side of the cupboard door? He'd listen to everyone. His mind was still on Mr. Bunn, and how had he found a way to do such impressive magic, because that was still a mystery. Angelique had told him right from the start he had answers. He needed answers right now, and he was already out of time. Think, Seth, think. He heard muffled footsteps passing through the lobby. Nightshade. Seth put his ear to the door, hoping for the sound of a friendly voice, a sign that his cat was all right. He took comfort at least in knowing Nightshade was pretty good at taking care of herself. He caught the drift of a conversation between Tiffany and her mother as they passed through the lobby.
"Dad is magic," Tiffany was saying.
Seth could picture her porcelain face creased in a determined frown.
"And no one thought to tell me. Your father's not magic, sweet pea. Do you never think? Did no one think I might want to become magic?"
Tiffany was breathing hard.
"I mean, are you really that stupid? Honestly, sweetness, there is nothing to tell. It's not possible, sugar pie."
They drifted off, and Seth was left thinking that he wasn't surprised Tiffany was angry. From the first moment Seth had learnt that Mr. Bunn somehow had the ability to bring Henri's wooden figures to life, he had wondered what Tiffany would do when she found out. If there was any magic around here, Tiffany would definitely think it should be hers. At the root of everything was magic. Pewter had suggested that someone seriously skilled at magic had tricked their way into the prospect. Someone with a plan. Someone who could get past charmed doors. Angelique had told him there was magic already here at the hotel. Distorted magic. Magic she didn't understand, she called it. She told Seth the mystery had started long before Dr. Tholomyès got here. So what was the answer? Mr. Bunn had found a way to get those figures to come to life. Was it really that Mr. Bunn had done incredible magic? Or was it just a trick? Or an accident? It had certainly convinced Angelique. None of it made sense. But he had to make sense of it. Pewter was convinced Dr. Tholomyès hadn't come to the Last Chance Hotel just to look at the latest candidates for recruitment, and that it was all about something else. Some crazy idea that Tholomyès had a secret agenda. Pewter was certain that tiny piece of magical bone on top of the wardrobe was the breakthrough clue to the whole mystery. Seth tucked his hands through his hair again. Could that really fit in anywhere? Sometimes Pewter seemed to be eccentrically lost in his own ideas. Sometimes Seth doubted he was any good as an inspector at all. Who could have done it? Who possessed a level of magical ability that meant they were capable of getting into the dining room? That's what it really came down to. Who here was truly magical? Had he seen anyone doing magic? Serious magic? Think, Seth. At that very moment, things crystallized like a blurred picture coming into focus. He'd seen jets of fierce blue light zapping out of the end of her cane. He'd known from the start, when she'd been flashing about using that dangerous cane and pressed it right into his neck, that she was doing magic.
she pretended to be his friend, and dragged Seth into keeping her secrets. How had Seth been so stupid, so trusting? It had stopped him seeing what he should have spotted right from the start. He knew exactly who was by far the most magical person here. There was one obvious person, and it wasn't Mr. Bunn at all. It was so ridiculously obvious. It was Angelique. Part 3. Chapter 38. A Lesson in Slicing. He couldn't go to Kingfisher, or Pewter, without some evidence. Not if he stood any chance of convincing them, because they were simply going to think he'd say anything, make up anything, just to save himself. How on earth was he going to outmaneuver Angelique? Could he get her to admit it all? He was busy brewing up all his resentment about just how she had played him along and tricked him, when a small voice outside the cupboard said, "Are you okay, Seth?" It was all he could do not to yell at Angelique right away. "I'm just fine. Looks like I'll get my wish to get away from here. Take the blame for what someone else has been up to. It's what I'm good at. Hope whoever really did it can live with that." "You need to help me, Seth." Seth could hear her more clearly now. She must have moved closer to the door. It wasn't the first time she'd asked for his help, but he simply wasn't going to be duped any more. "This place is very old," she went on, "seriously full of secrets. I'm getting closer, but I need to know everything, Seth." "Why should I help you?" he spluttered angrily. "You've lied to me and tricked me." She paused. "I had no choice." "I know what's really going on finally, Angelique," he said through clenched teeth. "How much have you been laughing at me?" There was a long silence. "Seth, I know things are difficult for you, but will you help me? It's important," she breathed quietly. "There's no one else. What can I do? I'm locked up. Anyway, I don't want to help you. You're on your own and can't use me in your plans any more."
Not me," she spluttered, "but I want to help you."
"I wouldn't help the person who murdered Dr. Thelomius. Not for anything." He hadn't meant to say it, but it was out there now. There was such a long silence. Seth thought he'd completely blown it, and she'd gone away. He'd meant to be so wily and careful, and get her to talk, and cursed himself for letting his anger get the better of him. But at the end of the long silence, she said, "It is so difficult to know where to begin," whispering so low he could barely hear. "But the fact, he's dead." He'd heard she was sniffing. "You're right. It's down to me." She'd admitted it. Seth didn't know why, but he didn't feel in the least bit triumphant. And then he heard footsteps, and she was gone. He was hardly any better off than he had been before. Who would ever believe him? It was a long time before he heard more footsteps. He put his ear to the door.
"Ah, look. Young Fishfinger might have dropped this big old iron key. I wonder what it opens."
There was the scratching sound of the door being unlocked. Seth blinked in the light of the lobby as he crept nervously out of the cupboard and was staring up at the looming figure of Inspector Pewter.
"Thought you might need to scratch your legs. Wanna come see something? Help me. Just a dull task, I'm afraid."
"Was the key really right there?" asked Seth.
"Not exactly. You
used magic?"
"I might have used an unlocking spell. Simple but effective. Doesn't change the fact that using magic is not for performing tricks, young Seth. The path to magic is one of the most difficult, treacherous and dangerous you could choose to go down. Particularly in untrained hands. Magic can be... Well, we have a whole department who spend their time reattaching the ears of people who use magic without quite knowing.